best of synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you for being with me today. We have a return guest, Mary O'Malley. She's the author of The Gift of Our Compulsions, A Revolutionary Approach to Self-Acceptance and Healing. And Mary was on the show a few weeks ago discussing her book, What's in the Way is the Way. And I loved it so much that I invited her back. Now, Mary, you specifically wanted to talk about the gift of our compulsions around the holidays. And I have an idea why, but how about you tell us why you're back on the show today?
Well, I think we are ready for an entirely new approach to compulsions. And there's no better time than the holidays. And then when January 1st comes and we've eaten the thing and drinking the thing, you know, and smoked the thing and whatever over the holidays, then we go into war. We try to get rid of our compulsions. And the statistics show that doesn't work. So I am a place of inviting people into a whole new way of healing your compulsions. In fact, when I self-published before my publisher picked it up, I called the book Healing and Being Healed by Our Compulsions.
Well, welcome back to the show, Mary. Thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here.
So in the introduction, you point out how unaware we can be that we even have compulsions.
Yes.
You mentioned like what happens if the computer crashes or the power goes out. So let's right. talk about what happens when things like that come up.
Well, it really is when we can't control life, when life doesn't show up in the way that we want it to show up. In fact, you could say our core compulsion is to control. And all the other compulsions are an attempt to numb out from that unease, and heartache comes when we can't control life. But the amazing thing is, we're not in control anyway. And that's what's so radical about this work.
So in your book, What's in the Way is the Way, you suggest that our core compulsion is to struggle. So
right.
is struggle the same as trying to control
as
life?
Control. Yeah, absolutely. Same thing. And yes, and we're ready. I mean, if you look at the evening news, it's all about struggle. And we've been doing this for eons. And I believe we're at a time in the evolution of humanity that we're ready to try something new. We're ready to heal through curiosity and listening and compassion and understanding rather than fighting and resisting and fearing and trying to dominate the parts of ourselves that we don't like.
Well, I've read your book cover to cover. I'm on my second reading again now. And you talk about curiosity throughout the book. And
right.
And I agree that's so important. But I'm also wondering, can't curiosity be a compulsion? Because I feel like for me, personal growth is something that I'm so compelled to seek out that maybe that's a compulsion.
I think anything can become a compulsion. It depends on whether your mind is the one that is leading the charge or your heart. Now, you use the word compel. I mean, it's something that's drawing you. And yes, at times the mind will take that over and become obsessed by it. But this work is about becoming curious about that shift. From when you are following what is calling to you in life and when the mind takes over and turns it into a struggle.
Okay, well, I have some questions for you, and I don't know exactly where you want to take the hour, but I have been doing this. I've been meditating consistently since I started reading your book, What's in the Way is the Way.
Right.
And what I'm noticing is that when I first started reading the book, I felt a lot more moments of peace and presence. Like maybe it was just
right.
beginner's luck. And lately, even though I am still doing the practice, it seems so much harder to bring myself back. Like my mind is just lately, the last week or so, it's just been kind of going brrr, constantly.
Right. And it does do that, does it not? You know, and the key phrase you used in there is bring your mind back. I have tried, and I'm not very successful at this, but I've tried not to use the word meditation because people, it's like the word God has got so many ideas around it, and meditation has so many shoulds and ought tos and ideas of what it looks like, a good meditation. A good meditation is you choose a focus, usually your breath, but it could be a mantra, or it can be even, eating your breakfast. And you stay there, and yeah, you go off, but you come right back. The next step, once you begin to see that there's something else going on here other than this storyteller in your head that really struggles with everything, and I mean everything. I mean it doesn't like the length of the stop sign or the spot on your shirt or something along that line. But then, of course, it can go all the way into illness and death. And so this you begin to see as you choose a focus and you bring your attention back to the focus. And then you bounce back into the storyteller. You begin to see that the storyteller is something that's flowing through you all day long. But right underneath it is life. So, yes, it's usually most people have an experience at the beginning where, oh, my God, it's so much freedom that you can just ground yourself here and you don't have to get caught in all this the thoughts and the feelings and the sensations that are flowing through you. But eventually that will all configure again because that's what we've been trained to believe. We get lost, we are having a wonderful sit and we take a deep breath and our waistband feels tight and then all of a sudden we're off to the races and, oh my God, I shouldn't have eaten that pie last night and I have to go back to Weight Watchers and I'm going to Hawaii and my boyfriend's not going to like me and you spend the rest of the time planning about how you're going to lose weight. That's how powerful this storyteller is in our head that we've been trained to believe is us. Now, after we begin to see there's something else going on here, and we understand, we can feel that it's something that we long for, this intimate connection with life as it is right now. The next step in your sits is to begin to get to know what takes you away, to not fight that, to begin to become interested about what the storyteller is talking about. And that's like putting together a picture puzzle, that slowly and surely you get to know how fear talks inside of you, or how shame talks inside of you, or how the one that wants to overeat or overdrink talks inside of you. And I call it look to unhook. So meditation isn't so much of, oh, I'm going to go here and go to peace. It's about choosing a focus, not judging when you drift away. Every time you come back, you're strengthening the muscle of your attention so that you can take it into being curious about what this storyteller is talking about at any given moment. And that's where freedom lies. Freedom lies in what I call look to unhook. Because the more you can sit in quiet, whether you're in your morning sit or you're waiting for the doctor or standing in line at the post office or whatever, you begin to use these opportunities to be curious about what the storyteller is doing. And the more you do that, the more you get to know the story of fear or the different variations on the story of fear and the different variations on the story of self-judgment and the different variations on the story of loneliness or despair or anger. And slowly and surely, those stories arise and you see them for what they are and they pass right through you. That's where freedom lies. So does that help in what you are beginning to discover in your morning sit?
It does. I'm actually doing it at night.
Okay.
Just because I know morning is more ideal, but that's the time that I've been able to create a commit to it. So what I do notice, though, is things like sadness and loneliness.
Yeah.
I've been, like, I'll sit with them, I'll feel them, and
yes,
and just be present with them. And what I notice is that they'll go away really quickly.
Yes, it's very powerful.
What I'm also noticing is that if there's a conflict, if there's someone else involved, and it's a conflict or anger or something like that, I don't yet seem to notice it until after. I get much more easily caught up.
But how wonderful that you can notice it after, that we begin to use our life as our laboratory, that we begin to understand one of the pieces we talked about in the last interview, that life is for us, that life is for life, and it puts us in the situations to help us see this storyteller in our head. I also call it the unconscious self, that thing that's talking all day long, that's made out of fear, and it's glued together with judgment. And we begin to be curious about it enough that it doesn't hook us back into its world. But it takes time. And so it's like a child learning how to walk. The muscle of our attention has become very, very weak because it just flows from one thought to another all day long. If thought says, I'm mad, you think you're mad. If it says you're sad, you think you're sad. Most people go to their deathbeds caught in the storyteller in their heads. Now, when you begin to strengthen the muscle of your attention by, you know, sitting once a day or adding a breath practice into your life or doing Tai Chi and having your focus be to come back and be the movement, slowly and surely you begin to strengthen that muscle of your attention. But if a child got up and walked across the room on its own for the first time, would you expect it to go run a marathon? No. It takes a while for the child to learn how to walk on his own, to learn how to run on his own. And then if the interest in the marathon comes, slowly and surely, you know, all those different muscles will be exercised. So be patient. Recognize the joy that you're really beginning to be able to see your reactive self or the storyteller or the unconscious self. And what you can do when you notice it after the fact is that you can then go back in your imagination in that experience and imagine yourself bringing that kind of curiosity into even a very difficult exchange. And I assure you that's going to be developing your muscle of your curiosity even more so, that it is just a joy when you discover yourself in the middle of a argument with your boss or a difficulty with your cat or something along that line. And instead of being totally wished away by the reactive self, you get curious. That's where you then have choice about what you're going to put out there in the world. So be kind with yourself and recognize that by God you can begin to see it. Then strengthen the muscle of your attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary, that brings up another question, talking about being kind with ourselves. How do we balance taking personal responsibility with maintaining an attitude of self-compassion?
Well, I love Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, he is a Buddhist monk that was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for by Martin Luther King, and he does this wonderful turn of phrase: "Don't just sit there, do something." He said, "Don't do something, sit there." That we're beginning to see that one of the most powerful gifts that we can give ourselves is to spend time with ourselves without distractions. This is difficult for most people. In fact, you know, I won't quite get all these statistics right because somebody told me about this in one of my groups, that they did a study of people. They put them in a room without any distractions for 15 minutes. No music, no cell phone, no TV, nothing to read, you know, just a chair to sit in. The only other thing that was there was an electric shock thing that you could shock yourself. And 70% of the men chose to shock themselves over and over again because they could not be with themselves as they were. When we begin to learn how to be with ourselves, to come back to ourselves, to actually embody ourselves, to listen to ourselves, we truly find that life becomes so much easier. You begin to move from your own innate wisdom rather than your reactive mind. And I think that's why Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, is saying, don't just do something, sit there. If we want to have a life of ease and joy, if we want to make a difference in the lives of our friends, our families, if we want to heal the world, get to know yourself. Give yourself the gift of some time every day where you just sit with yourself. Now, what I did in What's in the Way is the Way is there's a 10-week process in there. And it starts with just 5 minutes a day, and it walks you through. And believe you me, I've worked with people for 30 years now, and so I really know the collective human mind, the collective unconsciousness. And so this evolution of these 10 weeks is done in a way that doesn't wake up our resistance, that doesn't wake up our judgment, our expectations. We should be doing it different than what it is. And it allows you to begin to move at your own pace. And believe you me, this is the greatest gift you can give to yourself and to life. It will change the world.
Now, that brings up another question, actually. I have it written down here. Speaking of gifts, because the holidays are coming up, I know you wanted to talk about this before the holidays because
Yes. At
stressful times, that's when our compulsions really come to a
right.
head. But is this a book to gift to ourselves, or would you recommend people giving this as a gift to someone else?
I think people need to listen to themselves, and they will know about whether it is a gift to give to somebody else. I think Eckhart Tolle, who endorsed that book, said there's wisdom on every single page. This is a book that is you can read from cover to cover, and I've talked to many people who have read it over and over again. But also, it's a book that you can just open up so they can, and just, you know, on any given day, and just read until something strikes you. It may be the first sentence, it may be in the first paragraph, it may be in the page, you may go all the way to the end of the chapter. But if you choose to give it to somebody, you can say, this is a way that you can read this book. Because to understand, to go back to how, when we were young, we were the flow of life. Madness, sadness, gladness just flowed through us. There was no storyteller in our head. And slowly and surely we learned how, because we were raised by unconscious giants. They may have loved us, but they had left themselves a long time ago. And they wounded us, gave us our sacred wounds, and nobody was there to help us with them. And so we pulled ourselves up and out of our bodies. We learned how to hold our breath. Most people are very, very shallow breathers. We learned how to tighten our bodies. And we learned how to try to be what we thought we should be in order to purchase the connection that we so desperately need, that is more important than food for survival of human beings. And this is where compulsions come in, because in those wounds that we took on when we were young, the wounds of not being good enough or right enough, the wound of being all alone, the wound of helpless, hopeless despair, we all take on these wounds, and we all stuff them deep inside, and then we become human doings. And when that doesn't work, because it doesn't work, we discover compulsions, usually, you know, early teenagehood. And my definition of compulsions is any recurring activity we use to manage our experience. And so many people don't even realize that they are compulsively busy, or they compulsively watch television, or they compulsively are on the internet. But when we begin to look at this, it's so important to get the two core gifts that come embedded in compulsions. And the first is that we needed them. If we could go back for that day that your older brother took your toy and you were 4 years old and he taunted you with it, and then you went and bit him, and then you're the one that got into trouble.
This is what happens. Yes.
I know. This is what happens. And then we are told to go to our room, or we're swatted or something. Oh, my God, just feel what's happening inside of that child. It didn't know how to be with these oceanic feelings that we all have. That's so important to get. And so we learn how to numb ourselves. We learn how to move away. That's my other definition of compulsions, the act of turning away from ourselves. And I, oh, my God, I was so compulsive. I gained and lost huge amounts of weight and then went away to college and discovered alcohol, and then left college and discovered street drugs. And then when I was 24, I gained 97 pounds in a year. Because I had a very challenging childhood. And thank God I had the ability to numb myself with food and drugs and alcohol, but that didn't last a really long time. Food lasted, you know, a lot longer than that. And then the other gift of compulsions, that compulsions are only there when there's something, some disowned part, one of these parts that you have decided to hate and fear. Let's say it's your loneliness, or let's say it's even your self-revulsion, because I lived self-revulsion for a lot of years. And we hate and we fear this, and we will do anything in order to try to get away from it. And, you know, that's why I gained 97 pounds in a year. But as you begin to become curious, as you begin to let go of the war with your compulsions, let go of the idea that there's something bad and wrong in you for even being compulsive, because you've now begun to learn as a highly crafted survival system that you needed, then you can begin to become curious about what's here when you are interested in eating the thing, or drinking the thing, or smoking the thing. When you begin to do this, you begin to see that busy, busy storyteller in your head that is always liking and disliking. And my God, so they say we have 65,000 thoughts a day, and I add that most of them are really repeats from the day before. You know, you begin to see that this mind, this struggle in our minds is our core compulsion. We just stay caught in our mind. because we're desperately, without even knowing it, trying to manage these disowned parts of ourselves that we stuffed away so many years ago. And so now, the second gift of the compulsion is that whenever it's there, you can begin to learn how to turn towards, how to begin to actually heal the deep holdings. You know, people sometimes call them feelings, but it really is just bound up energy. You know, your despair, your loneliness, your self-hate, your grief, your fear. You can learn how to transform these back into the free-flowing aliveness that you are. And that's what the gift of our compulsions is about. And if it calls to you, if that calls to you, give yourself that gift. If it doesn't call to you, just email me and I'll send you one chapter out of it so you can get a sense of this, maybe the first chapter. But then if it calls to you, you know, you can share it with other people, because we need to start a revolution here. If we can heal the war inside of ourselves, and it's around compulsions is one of the places we can most clearly see this war, then we will become a part of the healing of our planet by healing the war inside of us.
Well, right now we are speaking with Mary O'Malley. We're talking about her book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, A Revolutionary Approach to Self-Acceptance and Healing. And her website is maryomalley.com. That's Mary, O-M-A-L-L-E-Y.com.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge. Because you're mine, I walk the
line. So, Mary, you mentioned if people want to get the first chapter of The Gift of Our Compulsions, they can email you. So what's the best email address?
Awaken@MaryOMalley.com.
Awaken@MaryOMalley.com. Awesome. Okay, so I just, there's some people talking outside of the studio and I can hear them, and I just noticed how it's like, I'm having all these judgments about.
Yeah, the mind is.
Yeah.
The mind is. But just for a moment, just take a breath and just know this is what life is offering. There's nothing to resist here. You can allow it just to be music that is passing through. That's the responsive mind. Mm. We live usually in the reactive mind, and oh my God, we pay such a heavy price for it. But we can use our compulsions to discover how to see, and see with great compassion, this reactive mind that psychologists say the foundations of it were pretty well formed by the time we are six. So as you begin to go exploring, you'll begin to see how young the angry one is inside of you, how young the judgmental one is inside of you, how young the scared or the despairing or the lonely one is inside of you. And your heart begins to open, and then you begin to live from response rather than reaction.
And so then how, let's talk about response versus reaction, because I feel like you still do have to deal with situations as they arise.
Yes, absolutely. And let me tell you, I invite all of your listeners to think of the last time that they reacted to something. Did it bring healing to the process? I would imagine not. And it may have been given you a short period of the joy of being right, and then probably went into guilt, you know, maybe even shame. So it is a much different thing to respond. This, we have three brains. And they've done some really, you know, brilliant studying now. In fact, I was interviewed a few years back for a book called M-Braining. That's the letter M for multiple braining. And it's a kind of a scientific book, but done in a really delightful, easy way to understand that we do have three brains, the head brain, the heart brain, and the abdominal brain. And, of course, the abdominal brain has been known about for eons. It's called the Hara or the Tatien, you know, in the East. And this is our knowing brain. Then there is the heart brain, and all the studies show this is our main brain. And then there's the head brain, which was created as a tool for maneuvering through life. It was never meant to have the task of being in charge of life. And so this head brain, for most people, is what is in charge of life, and it's a liking and disliking machine. And so, thus, it is very reactive. It will say in one moment, I want that cookie. You know, you've just, you know, seen a plate of cookies go by at this restaurant, and you've just finished dinner, you know, and you're halfway through the cookie, and the mind says, you shouldn't have done that. That's what we use to guide our life. And when we live out of the reactive mind, we pay a heavy price for it. Now, because we had to leave ourselves when we were young, because we didn't know how to deal with a lot of the stuff that we were experiencing, we turned down the energy, the wisdom of our belly brain and our heart brain, mainly by holding our breath. And then we ran away to our head brain. As we begin to turn towards rather than turn away, and this is what both of these books, you know, are about the art of turning towards rather than turning away, you discover this deep, deep pool of wisdom inside of you. In fact, there's a story at the beginning of The Gift of Our Compulsions called The House of Our Being, and you know, the short version of it is imagine this most wonderful house filled with light and windows open and sunlight. That's what it was like to live inside of ourselves when we were young. But we got scared out of ourselves, and slowly and surely, we started boxing up different parts of ourselves. And we duct taped them, and we put them in different rooms and locked the rooms and closed the curtains. And then we ran away to the attic of our mind. And there's a big screen TV up there, and you can, you know, watch all these stories about life. But it's not life. You're not connected to life. Well, these parts of ourselves, whether it's our loneliness or, you know, our anger or whatever, they know how to get out of duct tape. And they come up, and they pad up the stairs, and they knock on the door, and they say, will you let me in? And we just turn up the volume. We go even more deeply to our compulsions. But then you hear of this kind of way of being with yourself. It's the act of turning towards, of actually experiencing what you're experiencing. And, you know, of course, you open the door a crack and you see 14 parts waiting and you slam it shut and go turn on the TV again. But slowly and surely, you let a part in here and there. And you see how young they are. And you recognize that all the parts you boxed up and locked in all those rooms all those years ago have been waiting for your accepting attention. So you go down into the house, and you open up these rooms, and you let light in, but then you haven't gone down to the basement, and there's 14 locks on the doors, because these are the parts of ourselves that scared us the most when we were young. The part that scared me the most was what I call my no-way-out place, helpless, hopeless despair. And it does take time. And I use my compulsions in order to signal me when a part was there. And slowly and surely, I was able to go down to the basement and just found little homeless children down there and set them free, and now the basement is cleared up. And you notice a circular room. You never noticed it before because the basement was so cluttered. And you walk over to it, and you walk around it, and there's no door into it. But you feel it emitting this warmth. You just love it. So you sit down in front of it, and you just, your belly begins to soften, and your heart opens, and your mind gets very quiet. And the next time you open your eyes, the walls of this circular room have dissolved, and there is the wellspring of your own knowing self. So yes, we have to respond to different things in our life. But believe you me, when you have learned how to breathe yourself back into yourself and been curious about what you're experiencing, especially when you're compulsive, or maybe when you're sick, or maybe when you've had a fight with your mate or your boss, slowly and surely, the heart brain feels safe enough to be on board, and the belly softens, and the abdominal brain begins to make itself known. And you find yourself in situation after situation, challenging situations, that what comes out of your mouth you could never, ever have thought up on your own. It just comes through you as from the deepest wisdom that you are.
Mary, I'm curious if we can talk about the difference between compulsion and the storyteller, because I noticed as I gave that example of the people talking outside the room, I started to feel really anxious and like,
right.
People are on the air are going to hear them, and don't those people know how rude it is and how
right. That's
what
a storyteller.
Am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So, and yep. It almost felt, I mean, I almost felt like compelled right then to like jump up and, you know, get their attention. And I'm like, how am I going to stop this from happening?
I know. And can you hear the fear in that?
Yeah.
And the judgment. And then maybe even the judgment because you did something or didn't do something. Okay? So it's really important to understand that we come in three layers. And the top layer is this controlling self. It's where most people live all the day long. They're not even aware of it, you know, in that controlling self, one of the ways that it manages itself is through compulsions, okay? So let's say that it really did, you know, bleed into the interview and so on and so forth, and you get off the interview and you're going back to your home and you find yourself just stopping at the store and getting, you know, some cookies, you know. That's that top layer, trying to manage the second layer, which is where our vulnerabilities live, that we all have them. Believe you me, my main mentor was a man called Stephen Levine that wrote many books on death and dying, but he really wrote about how to be fully alive. And one of the things that he was talking about one day, he said, you know, I'm going to create a hat. And when you put it on your head, it's going to instantaneously broadcast over a loudspeaker all of your thoughts. And the room I was in was with 200 people, and everybody, it was a collective groan. And then he said, no, you would know so much more freedom because you would see we're all doing the same thing. So if you chunk that into these three layers, the top layer is the controlling layer, which includes compulsions because we're trying to numb our experience. We all do that to a greater or lesser degree. And then if you go into that second layer of the deep vulnerabilities that we had to stash inside of us, everybody carries them. I've been blessed to work with doctors and therapists and homeless people and teenagers and mothers and teachers and whatever over the last 30 years. We all have them, and it's so freeing when you begin to realize you're not alone. That's why I do phone groups and in-person groups and retreats and all that, so we can discover that we're all nutty as a fruitcake, and that's okay. But as you take your attention, free it up from that top controlling layer and get curious, not only about the controlling layer, and remember, curiosity doesn't have judgment in it, but also about the vulnerabilities in that second layer, and you learn how to meet them, then you begin to move into the bottom layer, which is the openness to life, when in a way it actually, you know, surrounds those two layers, but, you know, it doesn't quite work to say that, you know, when you're first offering this. So I have a good example. Would this be a good time to share that example that I think will bring everything together that we've talked about?
Sure. How about we go to a really quick break and then we'll be right back with your example. Is that good?
Okay.
All right. So we are speaking right now with Mary O'Malley. We're talking about her book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, A Revolutionary Approach to Self-Acceptance and Healing. You can find her on her website, maryomalley.com. Her last name is O'Malley.com. And if you want to get the first chapter of her book, just send her an email at awaken@maryomalley.com.
It could be global, trance, spoken word, rock, the usual and the weird, or it could be something different. Oral Tentacles, Thursdays 12 to 6 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
All right, so let's jump in to that example.
Well, I want to say something right before. We need to look at how we have been dealing with compulsions. And that is judging that we have them and trying to control them. And you could probably say that, you know, the most consistent New York Times bestseller books are about either diets or food plans. And the statistics show that it doesn't work, or it may work for a short time, or it may work that you may stop one compulsion, but another one will take over again. Because they are survival systems. They are your psyche managing parts of yourself that you haven't learned how to be with and thus set free. So this story comes out of the new way of working with compulsions. The important thing is to get is that I had been, really calm around compulsions. I mean, you know, alcohol and drugs did fade away, you know, before I was 30, but then eating stayed for a long, long time. But by 9/11, the morning of 9/11, I had been out of it for years and years, and I keep a chocolate bar in my house at all times. And that's so that, number one, the compulsion knows that, you know, if it really needs something, it can eat something. So I'm not trying to control it. But also, so, you know, I will go and enjoy a little piece of chocolate, but if I want more than a little piece of chocolate to melt in my mouth, I know there's something inside of me that needs me. But I was hit with a tsunami wave of compulsion the morning of 9/11. You know, the phone started ringing, friends, clients, you know, family, then I had clients come, then I had a group come in at 2 o'clock. When I shut the door for the last person of that group, I had an insane, I mean, it was almost like an anxiety attack. I got to get to the store. There was no curiosity. It was like being hit by a tsunami, you know, when you least expect it. I made it all the way to where my purse was. I made it all the way out to the door where I go out to my car. And curiosity kicked in and said, oh, what's going on here? And the compulsive one immediately said, don't give me any of that awakening crap. That's exactly what it said. We're going to the store. And if I had fought it at that time, it is a guarantee that it would have won. They are very, very powerful forces that when we try to control them, we literally empower them, and then they control us. In fact, the statistics from the U.S. Surgeons General report is that 98% of every pound that is lost in America is gained back plus some within a year and a half. And that plus sum is when you try to fight something, when you resist something, you actually empower it. So I said to it, because I had created a relationship with this, I see it as a survival system. It wasn't a bad part of myself anymore. And I said, well, I just remind you, we don't feel very well when we take care of ourselves in that way. I don't care. We're going to the store. But because I created a relationship with it, I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Would you give me 5 minutes on the porch? And then we'll go to the store. Two things about that. If the compulsion had said no, I would have gone to the store, but I would have gone to the store in recognition of in being there with the compulsive one that felt like it was going to die if it didn't get compulsions. The second thing is that the reason why the compulsive one inside of me said yes to that is because I had created a respect-filled relationship with it, and it knew that after 5 minutes, we would go to the store. I went and sat on my front porch on a beautiful September day, and I immediately brought my awareness into the breath, and there's a chapter on breath. Breath is so powerful, and there's a lot about breath and what's in the way, but there's a whole chapter on breath in The Gift of Our Compulsions. It's one of the most powerful healing tools we have access to, and it's right under our noses, and you don't have to pay anything to work with it. And so I just tuned in, and I just noticed that I think every single muscle in my body was tight, and my breath was very shallow. So very gently, I began to open it up again, not with force, but just reminding my whole system that no healing can happen when everything is on alert like that. And so as things began to calm and open, I was drawn to this fire, explosive fire right around my stomach area. And it was so uncomfortable. And I recognized immediately that was the sensation I was trying to get away from. I wanted to just try to eat it away. But as I brought my attention to it, and sometimes when you first start doing it, you need to bring your attention to, you know, how big it is and how deep it is, and does it have edges or does it move around or whatever. But, you know, I've done this enough that I could immediately go straight into the heart of the sensations, and I've done it enough that the part of me that was expressing itself as this fire in my solar plexus began to make itself known. And it was grief, and it was just came pouring out. And I cried and cried and cried, but I didn't get lost in it. I was there for the part of me that was deeply, deeply grieving what happened on that day. I was there for about 10 minutes. The compulsive one didn't say, 5 minutes are up, because it could see that I was taking care of what it had tried to take care of by going to the store. And after those 10 minutes, there was not one iota of interest of eating anything unskillful, because I had come back to myself. So I think that's a very good example. It does take a while to get there, but as far as I can see, it's not the quick fix, but it is the way out.
Thank you for that, Mary. Well, we have just a few minutes left in the show. We're speaking right now with Mary O'Malley. She is the author of The Gift of Our Compulsions, A Revolutionary Approach to Self-Acceptance and Healing. And her website is maryomalley.com. That's O-M-A-L-L-E-Y.com. And if you'd like to get the free first chapter of the book, just send her an email at awaken@maryomalley.com. Let her know you heard the show and would like that copy of the first chapter. And Mary, with just a few minutes left in the show, of course I want everyone to go out and get your book this holiday season. But just for people who are still unsure or maybe not in a position to add it to their list, what are a couple of things that we can do just to get started?
Yeah. The first is to know that compulsion is not your enemy. And it's not something bad or wrong about you. That's the first thing. The second thing is to know that for a while, you won't be able to do any of this, you know, when a compulsion is arising and, you know, when it is there. But you can begin to become curious. Just like we talked about, you know, being curious afterwards, you can begin to ask questions. And there's a wonderful chapter on questions in this book about both check-in questions, what am I experiencing right now, and you can do that after the fact. It's part of the way that I was able to heal so much from extreme compulsion is I began to not judge myself after a wave went through, and I could actually experience what compulsions did to me. And so it became much more, I became much more able, even at the beginning, to say, okay, I don't think I want to pay the price, you know, and then you can work with consciousness. It can be very helpful to give your compulsion a name. And I really, really invite it not to be a mean name. But that can be something that allows you more easily to relate to the compulsive one inside of you rather than from my name for my compulsive one is little one. Because when she comes, and she still comes every once in a while, and she's this little tiny, hardly even can see it wave, but I know how to be with her. And so know that your compulsions can truly heal you to your core.
Mary, that brings up another question. Do you have, now I realize that you've managed to overcome, or however you want to say it, with your other compulsions, but if you have more than one, do you give them different names, or does...
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Yep. And if people are interested in this, I have phone groups. You know, I do retreats. The next retreat is in Costa Rica in February. You know, I do phone counseling. I do Skype counseling. You know, it is a very wondrous thing when you can find yourself involved with people that are moving from trying to control their lives into connecting with their lives and doing that through curiosity and compassion.
All
so
right.
The support is there.
And Mary, I love your check-in questions, like the one you mentioned, what am I experiencing right now?
Right.
And I have to add, though, that it's easier said than done. In order for these questions to help us, we need to remember to ask them and remember
yes.
to be present. So do we just have to accept the process, even if it's really slow?
Yeah. It's just like, imagine yourself a child learning how to walk. Can you imagine that child hating themselves because they fell down? Or looking at, you know, a child that's a year older than them and saying, oh, my God, they can run and I can't. What's wrong with me? You know, I think it is very important to recognize that most people go to their deathbeds caught in their storyteller, reactive, unconscious, cut off from the joy of being fully alive. If this way of working makes sense to you, to your listeners, and it does to you, it's really important to know this is such a gift from life. You're on this path. You can't control this path. You can't make it go any faster. You can't slow it get down. You also can't stop it. But I have a wonderful metaphor. It's called the drops of water in the bucket. You know, and you've sat for 2 months for 10 minutes a day, and you've come back three times or five times in those 10 minutes. Each of those moments is a drop of water in a bucket. Then you look at the bucket and you say, my God, the drops of water are not even covering the bottom of the bucket. And then we get discouraged and we stop. But it's like I said earlier, this is not the quick fix, but this is the way out. And one day, without even noticing it, the bucket will overflow and your foot will get wet. So every moment of curiosity, whether you sit in the morning, that helps to strengthen the muscle of your attention. But I use any time I wait, whether it's, you know, in post office lines or grocery store lines or whatever, you begin to become fascinated. Oh, my God, this is a living moment in my life, and you want to come here. Those moments count, too. And I assure you that if you keep on following this path of awakening, that you will come to the place that the deepest, darkest challenges, let's say, you know, stage 4 cancer diagnosis or your loved one dies, you will be able to stay connected. That doesn't mean reaction won't come through, but you'll be able to be with reaction in a way that it calms down and you can literally move from that deep wisdom knowing inside of you.
I just want to clarify something, Mary. I believe it's in your book, What's in the Way is the Way, you recommend building up, you know, an extra minute each week,
right,
starting out with 5 minutes. And then you say, you know, if you're not able to do the full amount one day, just bring it back to 5 minutes. That's okay. But I'm curious, you say, you know, building up the muscle. And here is my control and needing validation. Do you get extra muscle points if you do it even when it's hard?
You become interested in doing it when it's hard because your curiosity is fascinated by what is going on. You don't get extra points when you're trying to effort and make yourself do it. You just create more struggle. So allow that part of you to say, I think I want to stay with this and I want to be curious about what's going on. And you may even want to have a little piece of paper beside you and you just jot down what the storyteller is saying. It's very powerful to stay curious when the shit hits the fan, you know, so to speak. But be gentle with yourself and don't force it.
Thank you. And if there's any moms driving with kids in the car, I apologize for the swear word. That's okay, though. I love that you just said it. Well, Mary, we have to wrap up in just a couple of minutes. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been such a pleasure. What would you like to leave us with?
That each one of us are each magnificent creations of life, totally unique, brought forth by life because life wanted to express itself as us. And where humanity is in its evolution, we all crawled into this struggling self. That's not who we are. We are free-flowing aliveness. We are love. We are that which can become the flow of life. Give yourself the gift of cultivating curiosity and the spaciousness of your heart. So everything you took on that caused you to tighten around life can be dissolved, and you can again know the joy of being fully alive.
Thanks so much, Mary.
Yes.
Happy holidays, and thanks again for sharing your work with us.
You are welcome. It is my joy.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So that was Mary O'Malley, and we were talking about her book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, A Revolutionary Approach to Self-Acceptance and Healing. And you can find her at maryomalley.com, M-A-L-L-E-Y. It's O-M-A-L-L-E-Y. And if you would like a free first chapter of the book, you can email her at awaken@maryomalley.com. I want to send lots and lots of love to you today, to you and to your compulsions and to all of those things inside that you struggle with, I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Love you so much. Namaste. And coming up in just a moment here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Horrific. So stick around for that. Bye.
Hey, Horace, give us three shots of your best bourbon. And have that Russian waiter I like bring it over.